Hello everybody, I'm George Myler. Well, thank you for coming to the channel. This is about the Iran war and political parties in the United Kingdom. Well, most are opposed. You look at the smaller ones like Sinn Féin, they're against it. But of course, Sinn Féin don't accept reality. They're denying their own nationality and claiming not to be British. But they don't take the oath to His Britannic Majesty. They're not in Westminster Parliament. They were elected there too. The separatists from Scotland, they're opposed to this. So is the Green Party in all its iterations. They've only got five parliamentarians. And who else is there? So the Liberal Democrats are, I think, all opposed, all 72 of them, I've got that right. The thing is, no indicative vote has been held. A convention was laid down in March 2003. I remember that St. Patrick's Day. It was a very bright day. It's hard to believe there's such a gorgeous day a war was going to begin. And a vote was held in Parliament, and so Parliament voted yes to authorise military action against Iraq. It was a majority of Labour MPs voted for it, but not a huge majority. About a third of the MPs were the payroll vote. Those who not just got their MP salaries, got higher salary for being a cabinet minister or a minister of state. Remember, each cabinet minister, there are about three junior ministers below him or her. And the Conservative Party, all but two of them voted for this. Kenneth Clark, later, again, Lord Chancellor, he was one of the few to vote against. He was a big beast of the Tory party, thrice lost the Conservative leadership. He'd been Home Secretary and Chancellor Exchequer. And then who else did that leave? So Liberal Democrats voted against. The Ulster Unionist, Democratic Unionist Party mostly voted for. But so this time, the Ulster Unionists are in favour. Well, there's only one of them, the UP, we usually mainly are in favour. The Conservative Party is very much in favour. Reform UK is in favour. Now Nigel Farage has changed his tune on this one. Nigel Farage, who accepted being in Afghanistan because he's part of NATO, believed in the fighting under the NATO Charter, but was against the liberation of Iraq. And I remember having him to speak on the 9th of January 2003, and already talk about a war against Iraq was coming up. And he was non-committal. He was seeming negative, but wasn't in principle opposed. I suppose we're still open to persuasion. We didn't know if there was going to be a second United Nations Security Council resolution. We didn't know if stronger evidence was going to come forward. We didn't know what Dr. Hans Blix's report was going to say. So he's somewhat keeping his options open. But when it became the more popular dissident position, certainly to screw Blair, he came down to no. But Reform UK has been the most strongest in vociferating to attack Iraq. Perhaps strange, but that's because it's quite a Trumpian party. And that's against public opinion. So, like, you know, 55% of people in the UK are against fighting this war, like only about 25% in favour, the rest neutral, and that's going to dip. So majority of Labour voters, a clear majority of Labour voters are against. The Conservative voters is much more 50-50. And so we see. So Kemi Badenoch, it's been disgraceful and disgustful the way she has advocated for this illegal war. Even she doesn't claim it's lawful. But one of the reasons why Reform UK has gone so this way is very Zionist now with Robert Jenrick there, who's just viciously anti-Palestinian. He never saw a massacre of Palestinians that he didn't like. It's just that there's no crime against humanity he won't support if Israel commits it. So he's utterly bigoted and just revolting. What a monster. So Kemi Badenoch, I mean, wow, she's abasing herself before Trump is very distasteful and unedifying. So there are obviously a few conservative dissidents who say no, it's just unwise, it's completely unnecessary, let's sit this one out. If a war can be avoided, it must be avoided. And obviously your party, led by Comrade Corbyn, he's totally against and so on. So the state of play is interesting. Starmer was circumspect, took a more nuanced position, reluctantly got involved. But notably, His Britannic Majesty has not proclaimed war on the Islamic Republic of Iran. The Iranian embassy in London is still open. I've walked past it. And obviously, the police are providing protection to the Iranian diplomats because all these Iranian dissidents there protesting against the Iranian government and causing for Reza Pahlavi, Mohammad Pahlavi, to come back as Shah. But you know, if it was a war, then the police would sort of break down the door and maybe seize any valuable intelligence, and the Iranian diplomats would be repatriated by way of a third country, neutral country, fly them to whatever, Turkmenistan, or they could cross the border by land or something like that. Like British diplomats in Iran would be seized and deported by way of Turkey, for example, and so on. So Turkey, they were a NATO country, has got friendly relations with Iran, and NATO does not have a common position on this war. Yeah, because you know NATO hasn't voted to do anything. A bit like even the Ukraine war. Although it's true that most NATO countries are donating arms to Ukraine, NATO as such doesn't have a collective view on this because Turkey is strictly neutral. It's not providing any aid to Ukraine. I'm not sure they've been selling things to Ukraine at the full market price. So that is the state of play. Now, that convention was laid down under Blair to hold these votes. And indeed, Cameron held one about 2013 about military action against Syria after the chemical weapons attacks. The vote was against. He didn't go ahead with it. Therefore, the United States didn't go ahead with it. It was Barack Obama was president at that time. And Gordon Brown had said, we came as prime minister, you know, there will always be votes, not military action. But Theresa May, she later ordered bombing raids on Syria without an affirmative vote in parliament, not holding one. So I thought one ought to be held on this. And it wasn't held and it wasn't urgent. The United Kingdom, I mean, act, because you even if it was urgent, it wasn't so urgent. You had to decide that minute. You could hold a vote that day and so on. So without a parliamentary vote, without international support, without domestic support, without a UN General Assembly resolution, or any even attempt to get one, there was never going to be one because, of course, Russia is a permanent member of the UN Security Council, therefore wields a veto. The People's Republic of China is also a UN Security Council permanent member and would definitely veto it. They've both got very cordial relations with Iran. So the Russians have seen an ally weakened. Remember, they got a partnership on the former military alliance signed. So if the United States did invade Iran, Russia wouldn't be obligated to send troops to fight to defend Iran. So this war, you could see this one coming, is proved yet again the superiority of American military technology, that they've really pummeled Iran, and the Americans have suffered minimal losses themselves. Is it 9 dead now? Okay, some civilians in some of these countries like Qatar, the UAE and so forth. But where the weakness of America has been demonstrated is it hasn't been able to keep the Straits of Hormuz open. And the Americans apparently privately promised the Gulf Arab countries that if war came against Iran, they would be able to ensure freedom of navigation in the Straits of Hormuz. And yet again, the Trump administration has overpromised and underdelivered. So Operation Epstein Fury, right? Yeah, Epic Fury, because the war succeeded in its main aim to divert attention from the Epstein files. Now, Iran's biggest ally may be Trump's attention span, because he's got the attention span of a mayfly. He'll just get bored of it and move on to something else and say, what, Cuba next? He's got blatantly a very strong case of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. You know, he can't sit still, always rambling, changing topics. So he's increasingly erratic. Nobody knows what he's going to do next. He ended the war, then didn't end the war in the same sentence. It's completed, like almost. Well, it's either completed or it's not. Wow. So, you know, he could end the war now and then start again in a month and end it and start again in 3 months. You know what's going to happen, the occasional airstrike, the occasional missile strike. So there's no well thought through strategy. It's completely uncoordinated. But Netanyahu was able to bend his ear. But yeah, it's enfeebled Russia. An ally of theirs has been weakened. But, you know, there's been no regime change. But maybe it's a warning to Russia. It's a warning to China. What could be done? I'm surprised the Chinese didn't be more help with the Iranians, give them some really good missiles, because if they would like to see America given a bloody nose, the Americans to go back with their tail between their legs and so on. But the Chinese, on the other hand, might think we want this war over fast, decisive win for the USA, and then it's over. And then we have the oil and gas flowing again, partly because they want to buy cheap oil and gas, but partly want the countries who buy from them to have plenty of money in their pockets from cheap oil and gas to purchase more Chinese manufacturers. Right, thanks for watching the channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate PayPal, George Carlin, Jim.com. Goodbye.